Tuning in. Big story today, of course, is the Obama speech as he accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway. I've got some thoughts on that, and so do a lot of people that whose thoughts were going, not a lot, but several that we're going to incorporate into the program tonight. But one of the things that's very irritating to me is the criticism of his receiving this prize from Republicans, because I think we all know that Republicans want war, they want death, they want destruction. They also want to see the economy collapse. This is their ticket back. If there's war, if there's dissatisfaction, if there is a sinking economy like there is, this is what Republican office holders live for. Republican voters are just screwy as hell because they go ahead and vote for these candidates and then they get more of the same. But anyway, for the Republicans to criticize Obama for receiving the Nobel Peace Prize is very telling, because first of all, they would criticize if all of a sudden he threw open his arms and showed the nail holes in his hands and the wound in his side and the scars left on his forehead from the crown of thorns, they would still insist that he was born in Kenya. They would still insist that he's not a legitimate president, even if he said, "Forgive them, my father, for they know not what they do." You know, and then all of a sudden the heavens opened and the first one to go would be Sarah Palin. They still would say he was born in Kenya and didn't deserve to be president. Republicans feast on death. That's what they're about. They feast on death, disorder, decay, chaos. This is what the Republican Party is all about. So to hear the criticism, because the Nobel Peace Committee, or the Nobel Committee, you know, Obama didn't nominate himself. You know, he just, I think he's a little bit, you know, questioning, like, what? I won the what? So we're going to play one little one-minute clip from his acceptance speech in Norway, where he acknowledges the obvious of a war, someone who has just committed more troops to war, receiving a peace prize. I think probably most rational people, forget Republicans, they're Republican rank and file, have their heads so far up their asses they can't even breathe anymore. And Republican office holders are totally irrelevant except where it concerns destruction. So let's set them aside. I think most people, average people, like you and me, we're average, aren't we? Sure we are. We remember previous Nobel Peace Prize recipients. One of the most infamous, as far as I'm concerned, was Henry Kissinger. Remember, I know a lot of you are too young to remember this, but Henry Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho, who was the negotiator for the North Vietnamese, trying to come to a peace agreement. At least I think the Vietnamese were. Kissinger was not. Kissinger and Nixon and the whole U.S. foreign policy establishment back there were no more interested in peace than they were interested in a seriously developing sexually transmitted disease. They you know, they're Republicans. They don't want peace. Keep in mind what I said a second ago. But when the Nobel Peace Committee awarded their prize jointly to Lê Duc Tho and Henry Kissinger, those of us who witnessed that back in, when was it, 68, 69, 70, whenever it was, I forget. But it was just 71, 70, I don't know. I mean, we just fell over dead. Everybody that I knew and I was involved in across the country, and people I didn't know, you know, the whole peace movement, the whole anti-war movement, we all fell over dead. We died that day. We just fell over dead. We were smitten. The hand of the Lord did smite us, and we fell down grievously wounded and dead. How do we come back to life? I don't know. Maybe we're still dead. I have no idea. When that occurred, of course, nobody said anything. You didn't hear, Democrats screaming and frothing and blood coming out of their mouths the way you hear Republicans now talking about Barack Obama. And regardless of how much one dislikes Obama, and I have come to the conclusion, I don't dislike him. I don't know him. But regardless of what you feel about his policies, again, he didn't, the contrast, and I'm going to get to this in a second in email, the contrast between George W. Bush and him, is stark. It's stunning. It's I don't know, north and south, east and west, whatever. But I will remember, for some reason, that year when Henry Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. I may not remember the number of the year, but I remember just thinking, what in the F is going on? This was at a time when they were still arguing over the configuration of the table around which they would all sit. Well, if you know anything about that war, you know what followed that war, or I mean followed that peace prize and the meeting between Lê Duc Tho and Kissinger was another, I don't know what, 30,000 dead Americans, another 1.5 million dead Vietnamese. So, but again, you know, the blood did not shoot out of the eyes of Democrats when Henry Kissinger got that award, as blood is shooting out of the eyes of these demonic Republicans with the award to Obama. Very interesting letter here from Epi 10. Subject line is, "Give me another drink, bartender." You know, when you get an email with a subject line like that, you, uh-oh. He writes, "Mike, well, religion has now officially killed health care. Do you believe this blank? This is year 2009. Can you believe this effing blank? What's next? The atmosphere? Yep, the religious morons have obstructed progress on that front, too. We should have been doing the hard work of stabilizing the man-made effects of global warming for at least the past 20 years, but because of religion and religion alone, our best scientific minds couldn't do anything except to warn us. Carl Sagan once said that had it not been for the repression of science due to religion back in the so-called Dark Ages, we likely today would be a space-faring species. But that didn't happen because we allowed religion to exist, and not only allowed it to exist, but as a society encouraged people to believe in fairy tales, and still today, these same insane relics of the past are given a place at the discussion table. In fact, all but a few at the discussion table are insane." Now, I take that back. They are all insane. And there's no end to this madness in sight. "Yeah, I'm a pessimist and a realist. Religion poisons everything," Epi 10 writes. Christopher Hitchens was exactly right with this statement. "The only correction I would make is to say effing religion poisons everything." Epi was pissed off when he wrote this. "Is there a deeper emotion than hate, Malloy? You're an expert on this. Maybe apathy? I still care. I don't know why I still care, but I do. I'm tired of feeling hate, but as long as religion exists on this planet, I will have to live with the hatred I feel and hate that, too. I hate these religious MFers more than I can even understand, and it adversely affects every relationship I have with humans. Admittedly, I'm not a people person, but can you blame me? This effing planet is insane." Well, anyway, about Obama, I hate to say I told you so, but you knew it, too. You knew he was a corporate hack because you said as much back when Kucinich, our only real hope, was still in the running. But you have to keep some semblance of sanity on your radio show, so I understand your need for optimism. We liberals and leftists weren't wrong about him, Malloy. He's just another conservative hack hell-bent on being a, quote, victorious, end quote, leader in the history books. History will, I'm afraid, not be kind to Obama. The bar is now so low that all I have left that's positive to say about Obama is that, quote, at least he's not Bush, end quote. And that is indeed pathetic. Blank this blank. Where's my blanking guitar? Epi 10. Come on, peace train.
Someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Someday, someday, someday it's going to come.
I've been crying all the way, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
Peace train sounding louder, glide on the peace train. Come on, peace train. Someday it's going to
be.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
It is 21 past the hour. Before we get to the phony stuff, and that is the politics, global politics, American politics, war, death, destruction, none of that is authentic. It's all phony. It has implications in the real world, but it's all phony stuff. You want some real stuff? That thing that appeared over, was it Norway the other night? I found this little piece today that said UFO watchers around the world are buzzing after that video footage, emerged of what they believe, the UFO watchers, they believe is the, strongest proof yet that we're not alone in the universe. It goes on to say that thousands of people got in touch with Norway's Meteorological Institute with reports of that spiraling blue light that appeared in the sky above Trøndelag, Norway, around 8:45 a.m. That was 8:45 a.m. It's pretty dark there. Well, it is, you know, we're getting up on the winter solstice holiday here, so yeah. The light, if you've seen the video, it's obviously it's like a giant blue cartwheel just spiraling around and around this bright object. And at one stage, it appeared to be anchored to the ground with a triangular blue beam. Somebody's trying to say, oh, yeah, well, that was a Russian missile practice. Oh, come on. Oh, for Christ's sake. The light then exploded into a ring of white fire, according to a British newspaper, prompting true believers on forums around the world to declare the moment a first contact. An observer from northern Norway told the UK's Sun, quote, it looked like a rocket that spun round and round. Well, if you've seen it, you don't need any descriptions from other people. You can look at the video. No one has come forward to explain the phenomenon as a hoax that I'm aware of, nor have any scientists or military experts been able to explain what the hell it was. Now, one theory is that it may have been a light show laser projected onto low clouds. Right. Or it could be swamp gas. Or it could be, I don't know. But the timing of this thing, where it concerns what time of early morning it was, and the large scale of the display makes that kind of unlikely. Stargate fans claim it's a UFO entering the Earth's atmosphere through a wormhole and say it explains how UFOs seemingly appear and disappear at random in our skies. One of the most popular conspiracy theories links the phenomenon to the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, and rumors of a, quote, black hole project, end quote, underway at that giant atom smasher. The Norwegian Space Center chief scientist, Erik Tandberg, told the Sun he agreed with many experts who believe it may have been a missile test from Russia, although Russia quickly denied any testing. The expert in Norway said, quote, I agree with everyone in the science community that this light was the weirdest thing. I've never seen anything like this ever. He went on to say, The spiral suggests the object came off course in balance and entered the spiral movement. Leaking rocket fuel could account for the blue light. And then he added, but I know that the military have denied this explanation. So we could be looking at an entirely new natural phenomenon. That's according to the Norwegian Space Center chief scientist Erik Tandberg. An entirely new natural phenomenon. I saw the video just like you probably have by now, too. And that's not a laser show. it's just not.
So what do you think it is?
What do I think it is? What do I think it is? Can I just cop out and say I don't know? You ask me what I think it is.
Well, there won't be any points given or subtracted for incorrect answers. I was just curious what you thought that little spinning thing was. Did you think we were being contacted by an alien life form? I'm just curious because I need to call, Alex Jones's show and let them know whether or not she'll be making an appearance.
You are a real hard-ass realist, aren't you? I mean, you just...
There is no mystery in life to me. No, that was some sort of man-made spacecraft. It was probably the freaking balloon boy people. They're out there. They gave up on a reality show in this country, and they're like, okay, we got a new one.
I don't know how you and I have managed to survive for 15 years.
Unbelievable. Molly would say, well, it's the Jesus star.
It's time for Christmas. I explained solstice to her tonight.
It's the Jesus. She doesn't get daddy. It's the Jesus star.
Well, I explained to her because we were singing Deck the Halls, and she had a little curious look on her face, like, what's this got to do with a manger? And I finally explained to her, she's only five, but I think she got it, that Deck the Halls is a pagan song and about all, yada yada. What do I think it is? I think it's somebody desperately from a different star system trying to contact us and just help us out of the mess, or just find out who we are. First of all, see if we're edible.
Tell me what you say. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring of voices in the sky? Voices in the sky.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Yeah, I know. The Russians have taken responsibility. They've confirmed that the light show was the latest test firing of a new intercontinental ballistic missile. Who do you suppose that's aimed at?
Doesn't that make you feel much better?
Yeah. It was launched by a submarine, the Dmitry Donskoy, in the White Sea early Wednesday, according to Russian newspapers. Russian defense analyst Pavel Felgenhauer said the images seen over Norway were consistent with a missile failure. He said, quote, such lights and clouds appear from time to time when a missile fails in the upper layers of the atmosphere, and sites like this have been reported before. Well, what that means to me, it was the Russians' turn to take responsibility. Sometimes we take responsibility. Sometimes the British take responsibility. It was the Russians' turn this time, because God forbid that anybody figure out what's really going on. And what's really going on, Mike? Well, what's really going on is, theoretical physicists, people like Stephen Hawking, Einstein, are absolutely correct. The time-space travel and time and space actually are the same thing. So travel from there to here is just a matter of finding the right route to do it. Carl Sagan's book, Contact, when it was made into a movie, was very clear on how you do that. Right? Of course. What, you don't believe that, do you? But you'll believe that some talking snake in a garden someplace, a few thousand years ago, convinced a woman thing to eat an apple, and therefore poison and death and destruction leapt out on the planet. What else have we got? Steve writes in, I got some really weird emails today. Not weird in a bad sense, but just, you know. Steve writes in, Mike, I'm checking the score, and it looks like the Republicans are still in power. Why? Because no one in the majority party is getting anything truly done. I'm so done with the Democrats. They have proven to be a bunch of worthless, selfish idiots that are not willing to fight for the people who got them in there in the first place. And now I'm exhausted trying to reason out the deal as to why I voted for them ever. Stop the wars? No. Pass a single-payer health care plan? No. Help the poor and middle class first? No. Stop the corporations from raping and pillaging the population? Hell no. Because they're collecting checks from them. Change that we can believe in? This is not what I voted for. I feel conned, and there's nothing different between Barack Obama and W, aside from the fact that the current president can make getting screwed a little easier to tolerate. He'll leave a mint on the pillow afterwards, like Clinton did. I never thought the new face of fascism would look like me. Continue the scream, Steve. And then our friend Dr. Sachs, who is a musician with the Count Basie Orchestra and writes in every once in a while. He wrote in today, Mike, my lady said that your emailers have such good punctuation and grammar, you never have to correct them. I'm going to have to pay more attention. I type fast and sometimes don't even read it. You were spot on about the healthcare failure the other night. What a drag. Anyway, I was getting into trouble on Facebook again today. Someone said Obama looked sad in Oslo. And then another said he was sad because he knew he didn't deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. So I tossed in another perspective to the mix. Here it is. This one on his Facebook, Dr. Sachs's Facebook page. You know, the man didn't nominate himself, and his winning reflects well on the United States, so it seems to me to say that our president didn't deserve it really is interesting. I think the fact that he inherited a mess, an imploding economy that experts said was headed toward another Great Depression, which we've avoided so far, rising unemployment, two wars, unresolved prisoner-combatant problems, threats of terrorism, burgeoning health care problems, debt from the past administration, and now a decision he made to send 30,000 troops. Do you expect the man to be up there dancing an effing jig and smiling about all that blank? You know, my mom took us to marches so we could get the right to vote, because all over the country 40 years ago, some blacks could not vote and lived in such segregated conditions. My mom and dad moved us into that upper middle class neighborhood in 1964, it had the third largest per capita income in the U.S. that year, where we were the first black family to live there. And they did it for two reasons. For better schools, and they thought at the time that integration would break down the barriers. I was 5 years old. 40 years after Martin's I Have a Dream speech, a black man had the courage. Please don't say he's half white. A black man had the courage to run for president, travel the country, and we elected him. He will go down in history as a people coming from slavery to be president. That alone, the world is saying, deserves a prize. If you think it was easy, let me tell you how uncomfortable I feel still today, just walking into certain diners across much of the United States. I'm giving the cat an Oscar, a Grammy, and a Nobel. Dr. Sachs. And the parenthetical, he says, please don't say he's half white. I have majority white blood from slave grandfathers in me. And no one asked me if I was mixed. And women still clutch their purse when they see me. Happened today. Lady was nervous because I was behind her, walking the same direction. She actually stopped and pretended to go another way. As I hit the remote for my shiny white Honda coupe, I guess she didn't see the white blood in me. Huh. Dr. Sachs, who travels around the world and creates music and sends me an email every once in a while. Thanks, Dr. Sachs. Michael in Roswell, regarding the Peace Prize speech, Michael writes, unfortunately, he now is Bush. In that speech, he used Bush's self-referential and self-aggrandizing term, quote, war president, end quote, to describe himself. Mike, I don't think reading 1984 was enough. Obama's speech could be read as war is peace. It's time to read Orwell's essay, Politics in the English Language. Sigh, Mike. Play that soundbite for me, Kathy, if you would. This is about a minute long. Oh, and by the way, why is Newt Gingrich, or I should say, why are Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin, why are news media reporting anything Sarah Palin says or does? What's next? We're going to know every time she goes to the bathroom? What is this craziness? Why are media in this country making something out of this half-wit? I'm sorry. Both Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich said they thought the speech was good. Here's a one-minute clip from it.
The commander-in-chief of a military, of a nation, in the midst of two wars. One of these wars is winding down. The other is a conflict that America did not seek, one in which we are joined by 42 other countries, including Norway, in an effort to defend ourselves and all nations from further attacks. Still, we are at war. Now, I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in a distant land. And some will kill, and some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace and our effort to replace one with the other.
Well, you know, the quickest way to have done that insofar as our involvement in what is, I don't know, what do you call the killing and the madness that goes on in Afghanistan? If we were to remove the Soviet Union, remove the United States, remove the British Empire, remove Alexander the Great, remove Genghis Khan, if we're to pull everybody back, what would that be called? I guess it would be called an ongoing familial or family, tribal, whatever you want to call it, conflict in a country that is, I don't think, ever going to be anything other than what it is. It's been that way for thousands of years, I guess, or hundreds, thousands, millennia, I don't know. Sure, they have Toyota pickup trucks now, but so they have Kalashnikovs, so they have shoulder-fired missiles, thanks to us. But sans the presence of all these foreign powers, what is Afghanistan? Is it a country that is constantly in some form of conflict? They're crazy because they're religious fundamentalists, so obviously they're going to suppress females because they subscribe to the same nonsense that the Jews and the Christians do, where it concerns woman being the bringer of death and sickness and sadness and depression and disease. I mean, they all share that. All three religions share that whole thing, that creation myth. So, you know, and the families of the tribal people in that country go back. I'm sure they trace their family history back back to the point where they were chiseling stuff in stone. I mean, come on. This is not the United States. This is not Great Britain. This is a civilization, a tribal civilization that's...
Renegade Talk Radio, done right.
from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, now if we could just get our cues right so I wasn't talking when we started playing commercials. Sorry about that. 10 before the hour. What was I saying before I was really interrupted by people who pay for the program? about Afghanistan. Were it not for the presence of foreign invaders, what would the country look like? It would look like today, like it did all those years ago, except they now would have Toyota trucks and shoulder-fired missile launchers and so on and so forth. We have no business being there. I think we all understand that. We do have some business trying to settle the differences in the Middle East that foments foments terrorism and exports it. That seems to me to be where the focus should be, on finding some kind of a settlement where it concerns the Israelis and the Palestinians, some sort of peace negotiations between Shia and Sunni, some way to convince the Muslim world that the Christian world, at least that's how they perceive us, is not interested in continuing the Crusades from 1,800 years ago or 1,500 years ago, and that, you know, okay, Muhammad's cool, Jesus is cool, Allah is cool, let's everybody just, you know, stop this. Doesn't that seem to be, it seems to me, but then, you know, I'm a throwback. I am a moss-backed liberal who still believes this nonsense, you know, that the solutions are very simple. If people just stop screaming at each other and sit down and talk, you know, lower your missile launchers, lower your guns, you know, stop sending Blackwater agents into other countries to blow people up and kill people, and then everybody stand around picking boogers out of their nose saying, well, that must have been terrorists. Oh, man. But anyway, wouldn't it have been cool if if Obama just would have said, I'm here to accept the Nobel Peace Prize, and as a recipient of this prize, I got to do something for peace. So I'm going to declare a complete withdrawal of all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, Iraq, Germany, Korea, Japan, the U.K., Central America, wherever troops are. And, Oh, that's crazy talk? Okay, I'm sorry. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, Obama actually said in his speech today, quote, we will not eradicate violent conflict in our lifetimes, end quote. And we all know that he isn't going to be putting a whole lot of effort in even trying at this point. When can we get off this roller coaster ride to hell? Andy in Seattle. Never. You know, war and death and destruction is obviously, well, I guess it's obvious, genetic. Has something to do with competition for space and food and females. All right, everybody, you can back off now with the criticisms about my take on lights in the sky. Ward in Japan writes, subject line, UFO, get a grip. Mike, I grew up in Southern California within 60 miles of Vandenberg Air Force Base where many missiles were launched. They often resulted in UFO calls. Do a search. Google images, Vandenberg missile launch. Take a look. Ward in Japan. Jeff in Valencia, California writes, Mike, let us get real. Kathy's 100% on target. Back in the 70s, I was wrangling horses, a bunch of rich bastards down in the southeastern corner of Arizona. On the Sharps cattle outfit. Thousands of acres. We all settled in, sitting around the campfire, BSing, and suddenly on the western sky was something that scared the blank out of all of us. It was a Vandenberg base in California missile delivering a satellite. The shockwaves deliver the same odd appearance in the sky as in the Norway case. This object, whatever the hell it was, apparently in my opinion, was being fired directly away from the viewers, whereas the California missile firing at Vandenberg went right to left in the western sky. Jesus, man, that lit up the entire sky as it climbed toward the outer atmosphere. My brother works at Vandenberg and has invited me to watch the latest missile firing, and I've had a cold and refused to drive north. And then he writes in boldface, told you, Mike, I just heard you say the Russians take credit, failed missile firing. We are alone, Jeff writes, in the cosmos, and that really scares the blank out of us, especially the sky spook Jesus freaks. As for contact, you and I will never see that. and what civilized culture would even want to approach us dangerous psychopaths. Yeah, the little blue planet is beautiful from a distance in space, but it's populated with apes. Jeff in Valencia, California. Gosh, you people are just so cynical. I don't know. How did I ever acquire such a cynical audience? Oh, my. It's almost time to get out of here for this particular segment. When we come back, I just want to talk a little bit about Obama's speech. Tony in Maine writes, wanted to lend a theory as to what we saw in the skies over Norway. I think what that was is the beginning of a polar shift, something called pole reverse. Reversal that has something to do with the realignment of the galaxy. Not sure if you're aware of Edgar Cayce.
Oh, yeah.
But he predicted some 70 years ago that the Earth will experience a pole reversal that will coincide with Mayan prediction of 2012. I know it sounds kind of offbeat, but does it sound any more offbeat than the explanation we're getting from various governments? I've included a clip from YouTube. Don't mind the source. I couldn't find the video I really wanted to show, but I'd been reading up on Cayce earlier this year, and I recall a photo that looked very much like the blue spiral light that appeared the other night. So just check out the video, and you will see the same kind of spiral. So who knows? Maybe Cayce was right. And this pole reversal phenomenon could be the beginning of the end of the way we live our lives. And get the hell out of the South, because if this does happen, the South will be underwater. Tony in Maine. Yeah, I'm familiar with Edgar Cayce, and yes, I'm familiar with pole reversal. It's happened several times in the history of this tired old planet. I guess it's not so old. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. Up is down, left is right. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. I'll tell you, it's colder than a well digger's ass here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains. It is indeed. We got the heat cranked down, though, because we have forced air heat here, and with humidity outside around 22%, that means inside it's like the Mojave Desert if we keep the damn heat running. So, when we put Molly to bed tonight... Well, actually, when I put her to bed, Kathy's down here working the last few minutes of the show, but bundled her up with a couple of blankets and a sheet and all her teddy bears and all her little friends in there. And fairies hopping around outside of the window trying to get in. And big old quilt that, I don't know, passed down through the family from one side or the other. I don't know where it came from, but it's sure warm. And... But down here in the studio, three floors down, it's colder than hell. But that's all right. Keeps us awake, right, Kathy? Alan is in Payson, Arizona. He says it's home to over 50 churches. And he writes, Mike, this ass clown, Senator James Inhofe, the global warming denier, is actually going to attend the global warming summit as a, quote, one-man truth squad, end quote. This is the fellow who believes in talking snakes and that the creator of the universe had his son tortured to death because I touched myself when I was 12 and maybe some other times, too. Science, bad. Magical, sadistic sky daddies, true. Whatever. All right, Alan, you just... You keep listening, you keep emailing in here, okay? I like getting your emails. President Barack Obama entered the pantheon of Nobel Peace Prize winners this morning with humble words, acknowledging his own few accomplishments while delivering a robust defense of war, and promising to use the prestigious award to, quote, reach for the world that ought to be, end quote. A wartime president honored for peace. So says Ben Feller, writing for the Associated Press. After nine days after ordering 30,000 more U.S. troops into battle in Afghanistan, Obama delivered a Nobel acceptance speech that he saw as a treatise on war's use and prevention. War's use and prevention. He crafted much of the address himself, and the scholarly remarks at about 4,000 words were nearly twice as long as his inaugural address. In them, Obama refused to renounce war for his nation or under his leadership, saying definitely, defiantly that, quote, I will face the world as it is, end quote. And he is obliged to protect and defend the United States. Obama said, quote, a nonviolent movement could not have halted Hitler's armies. Negotiations cannot convince al-Qaeda's leaders to lay down their arms. To say that force is sometimes necessary is not a call to cynicism. It is a recognition of history. End quote. Of course, I have a problem with that because, I'm the sort that when I see a blue spiral in the early morning sky over Norway, I immediately think, wow. I don't immediately think, oh, that's a collapsing missile. A nonviolent movement could not have halted Hitler's armies. Well, if you start the clock right there, you're probably right, but... if you move the clock back 25 years before 1939 and the invasion of Poland, if you 25 years back to 1914, when the royal families of Europe, all of whom were related by blood, if not by marriage, were starting to have a big family squabble that was going to wind up killing probably 100 million people, given the phase one and phase two of the Great War, phase one being so-called World War One, phase two being so-called World War Two. If back around that time, well, maybe we should go back a little bit further. If Teddy Roosevelt hadn't gotten all froggy with the Spanish and felt like he had to jump. I don't know. To say that force is sometimes necessary is not a call to cynicism. It is a recognition of history. History repeats itself, Mr. President, first as tragedy and second as farce. Where are we? I mean, what comes after tragedy? And do I have it backwards? History repeats itself first as farce, then as tragedy. Is it tragedy and farce? The point is, it doesn't matter. Isn't there a way to escape this? I don't know. I'm really disappointed in my president. I am sorely disappointed, and it's my fault. You know, it really is. It's my fault. I listened to Obama during the campaign, and I listened to how he could, honest to God, talk in paragraphs. He could start saying something and 4,000 words later tie the beginning back to the end, which is no mean feat, let me tell you. I mean, he came across, he was the president of, or the, whatever it is, the Harvard Law Review, or is it the Yale Law Review, or is it Princeton? Maybe it's Brown. I don't know, but it was a big time Ivy League school. He was a cosmopolitan, or is a cosmopolitan, you know. A mom who was this, a dad who was that, raised over here, brought back there. Had lots of influence from foreign to us cultures and religions and races and on and on and on. The kind of cosmopolitan that makes a hidebound, Jesus-fearing Republican in this country wet his pants as he grabs for his Bible and his gun. But, gee, Mr. President, did it have to go down like this? Did you have to? I mean, why didn't you refuse to accept the Nobel Peace Prize? Why? I mean, of course, the Republican dunderheads, the rank and file with their head way up their asses, and the leadership, the Republicans in politics, I mean, they are war lovers and death and molding and stuff. Forget them. But for the people who kind of sort of respected your rhetorical ability, your intelligence, your logic, I mean, for us, why didn't you say, hey, guys in Norway, that's really nice, but I'm not going to... I realize that Mandela is in that group, and so is Schweitzer, and you know, but so also is Henry Kissinger. So I think I'll pass, okay? Besides, I don't deserve it! Would that have been so hard? Wouldn't that not have been an historical moment? Other Americans have won. Other people of color have won. Other statesmen have won. Other political leaders have won. Who's refused it? I don't know. I don't know. I didn't do my homework today. I didn't go to Wikipedia or wherever or ask.com. I don't know. But has anyone ever been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize and stood up on their hind legs and say, no, I don't think so, because I haven't done anything to deserve it. I'm actually a warmongering American, and I just committed, 20,000 more, 30,000 more troops to go kill and be killed. And you people must be out of your goddamn minds even considering me as a candidate. Are you crazy? It's a Nobel War Prize. Is that what it is? I talk a good talk, and I look cool. And I can swagger, and I'm not a dunderhead like Bush. But I'm still ordering people to their deaths. And you're going to give me the Nobel Peace Prize? What goes on up there in those long, dark nights? Do spirally things start showing up in the sky?
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
I face the world as it is. Kathy of a Green Bay says, now there's a vision for you. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that makes Barack Obama a realist in the Kathy Bay mold, whatever. I face the world as it is. I find that a little bit hard to believe. Not Barack Obama. I think his history would indicate that he saw the world as it is, and kind of like the eulogy for Bobby Kennedy, paraphrasing, of course, and you know, said, why not? Why can't I do this? What? I'm... I'm who I am, and I think I'll be president of the United States. Is that facing, did Barack Obama face the world as it is when he decided to run for president? Okay, well, maybe he did. He also spoke bluntly of the cost of war. He said that the Afghanistan buildup he just ordered regarding that, that here's a quote, some will kill, some will be killed, end quote. Now, I'm just tempted to get all hysterical on you right now and, you know, just get all fingernails on the chalkboard with that statement. But why bother? Really, why bother? Some will kill, some will be killed. I don't think I've ever heard a more relaxed, cavalier phrase about war than that one from anyone. I don't know. I didn't do a LexisNexis search to see if somebody else has ever said anything similar to that. Some will kill, some will be killed. I mean, that's cold. That has icicles on it. You know what I'm saying? And I don't care what he followed up with. He followed up, no matter how justified, war promises human tragedy. War justified. I don't know. I really got problems with that. But Barack Obama is a hardcore Christian. You know that, don't you? I know the people with their head 20 feet up their asses would like to assume that he's a Muslim, but he's not. He's a hardcore Christian. And to hardcore Christians, hardcore Jews, and hardcore Muslims, the phrase, some will kill, some will be killed, is just a trippingly simple phrase. I mean, there's nothing cavalier about it at all, right, Malloy? It's just like, well, let's go down the ice cream store, and on the way down there, we might get run over by a truck, but we might not. So let's go have some ice cream. Some will kill, some will be killed. He also stressed the need to fight war according to what he said are, quote, the rules of conduct, end quote, that reject torture and other things. What to reject torture? I've never been in combat and would never go. And if anybody in my family at this point, I mean, my offspring or the offspring of my offspring ever started talking about going into combat, I would do something terrible to them so that they would no longer be physically fit to go into combat. Unless we were invaded here, if somebody came in the neighborhood or the country or the state and started killing people, sure. But you know what I mean. I don't have to explain it again, do I? Rejecting torture. What is torture? Would lying on a battlefield of your creation or the creation of your civilian leadership, and there you are, lying on a battlefield, and you look down and you've got holes all over and your body fluids are leaking out and a couple of points they're gushing out into the ground, the sand, the jungle floor, the pavement, wherever you are. But if you're in Afghanistan, Kipling's lines about the women there come out and, well, you know, while you're dying, just roll over on your knife, soldier, or whatever it was. I'm forgetting the line. Don't send it to me. But isn't that torture? You're lying there and you're from Detroit or Atlanta or San Diego or Seattle and you're lying there and you're 24 or 19 or 26 and you've got a wife, girlfriend, husband, buddy, friend, mom, dad. It's Christmas time back in Seattle or San Diego or Atlanta or Detroit and you're lying there on the goddamn ground and you know you're dying. Isn't that torture? Or does torture only occur in the Winston Smith O'Brien scenario? Wouldn't that be torture? And when you deployed over here to Afghanistan, Vietnam, wherever it is you are, Iraq, I don't know. But when you deployed over here, what did you leave behind, soldier? You left your wife. And you left a 2-month-old baby. Isn't that torture? That soldier, that Marine lying there on the ground and, watching the dark red stain spreading from underneath him. And there's no pain because his body has gone into deep shock. Isn't that torture? I think it is.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Yeah, I missed it completely. Sometimes I wonder why there's any credibility attached to this program at all. Bill in Ottawa reminded me that Lay Duck Toe did refuse the Nobel Peace Prize. And it was 1973 when Lay Duck Toe and Kissinger were awarded jointly the 70th 1973 Nobel Peace Prize for their efforts in negotiating the Paris Peace Accords. However, Lay Duck Toe declined the award, stating there was still no peace in his country. Now, that's honor. That's integrity. And that's what a man who... that's what a man who is employed by the side in a conflict that will win will say. So, Bill in Ottawa, thanks. I completely missed that. Now that you sent me the email, now I remember. Roz in Canada writes, Mike, I heard a few people refer to Obama as a man of peace, but a peacemaker does not go to war. It's quite simply a case of by their fruits you shall know them. I'm left strangely cold by this president. Just because he speaks in a poetic way does not make him a good man. There's more to him than he'll show, and it may not all be good. I don't know. I just go with my feelings, Roz. Yeah, there is that, isn't there? Anyway, the need to fight war, according to what Barack Obama calls rules of conduct that reject torture and other methods, I don't know how you can do that. I had the misconception, as I guess maybe a few other people did, that Barack Obama was a man of peace. Dick Cheney and all Republicans love war as long as they don't have to fight it. They love seeing people go to war. They love the death and the smell and the stench and the murder and the mayhem and the chaos because they make money from that. As Smedley Butler said, war is a racket. But Barack Obama, you know, it's very difficult, isn't it, to look in the mirror and say to yourself, Jesus Christ, did I have this one wrong or what? And by the sense I'm getting from the tone of a lot of emails I'm receiving here lately, a lot of Obama supporters are now having to deal with that moment. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people just try to find a rationalization for it. Well, you know, he's got a mess on his hands. Well, he's got to do this. Well, and I honestly, God, tried to do that. I did. You know, well, he's got a mess on his hands. Look what these filthy Republicans handed him. Look how the filthy Republicans have withdrawn from governing the country. They've just withdrawn. They're not there. And that's probably a good thing. I mean, I don't know. I wish them all into a shake and bake stage of hell. All Republican office holders. The other ones, the ones with their head 20 feet up their asses, the Republican rank and file, forget them. Theirs is a very sorry lot. He emphasized, or Obama did, the need to exhaust alternatives to violence, using diplomatic outreach and sanctions with teeth to confront nations such as Iran or North Korea that defy international demands to halt their nuclear programs. Or those such as Sudan, Congo, or Burma that brutalizes their citizens, he says. Obama said, quote, let us reach for the world that ought to be. We can understand that there will be war, but still strive for peace, end quote. We can understand that there will be, will, not shall, will, there will be. It is the will of the people. It is not a future, an observation of potential future, which is the difference between will and shall. Will means what it is. There will be war. There shall be war is amendable. It can be changed. But there will be war means exactly what it says. And that's what Obama said. There will be war. How does the Nobel Peace Prize go to someone who says there will be war? How does that happen? How does that? And the next clause, and still strive for peace, is utterly meaningless. It's canceled by the first phrase. There will be war. That's a definitive statement. But we should strive for peace. That's nonsense. There shall be war. Yet we should still strive for peace. It's a little bit easier to work with if you believe that war is not, and killing and murder and mayhem is not a human condition, that it can be transcended. Right? 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 But to follow up "there will be war" with strive for peace kind of fits in real very neatly with "some will kill and some will be killed." I don't know, President Obama. You're breaking my mind. You really are. You're just breaking my mind into a million pieces. I don't know. I don't know. The Nobel Committee made its announcement in October when he wasn't even 9 months on the job. They said they were recognizing his aspirations more than his achievements. Okay, quick. Nobel Committee, I aspire to find a cure for cancer. Give me next year's Nobel Prize in Medicine. But I aspire to it. I think cancer's nasty. I want it gone. Give me the prize. Because he aspires to peace. Okay, all right, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. In awarding the prize to Obama, the Nobel panel cited his call for a world free of nuclear weapons. Physicians for Social Responsibility have been talking about that for 35 or 40 years. For a more engaged U.S. role in combating global warming. But, Mr. President, if you really mean that, then why are you not at the entire conference? Where is it? Copenhagen? Why are you not in a look? Our industrial base is in the toilet. We have millions of people out of work. Wouldn't this be a good time? I mean, you don't do it when the economy is humming along and the smokestacks are belching out all this poison. Do it now. There's nothing happening here. Just lobby or use executive order like your predecessor did. Just, you know, if you're really serious about bringing a halt. Oh, never mind. Never mind. Nobel cited his call for a world free of nuclear weapons for his support of the United Nations. Support of the United Nations, really. How many times has United Nations in their resolutions condemned the actions taken by the Israeli government against the Palestinian people who have been living in refugee goddamn camps for 50 years, 60 years now? How many times, Mr. President, has the United States abstained or voted no on a resolution condemning the actions of Israel against the Palestinians? So when you talk about support for the United Nations, come on. Come on, Mr. President. Come on, come on, come on. And for broadly capturing the attention of the world and giving its people hope. That's what he says he's striving for capturing the attention of the world and giving its people hope. Giving its people hope. Let us, Let's send an envoy to Congo. Let's send an envoy to Sudan. Let's send an envoy to Eritrea. You know, all those places that we read about and don't pay any attention to, where people are starving, where they look like walking skeletons. And let's go over there and say, ah, but there's hope. Now, I'm not trying to join the ranks of you cynics, but isn't that almost obscene? Can something be almost obscene? Isn't that obscene to talk about hope? Well, what are you talking about? There's no hope for anything in those parts of the world. Nothing. Hope doesn't exist. Hope was the first thing to go. And then the grass, and then the water, and then the kids, and then the ones suckling at their mother's breast. What are you talking about? Hope! How about some water? screw the hope. How about some intense diplomatic action to save the lives of millions of people that are going to die because they can't feed themselves, they can't find drinking water, they're dying of worm diseases from waterborne illnesses and stuff. Hope? Come on, Mr. President. Hope is really cool when you're running that word, when you're running for president, when you're working a political campaign. That's a good one, especially when the United States has come out of 8 years of murderous, warmongering, crazy people running the country. But Jesus, God, that's when hope, the word hope really works. Hope, 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 change. Yes, yes, yes. But see, we are well fed to the point of half of us are obese. And even though we're losing houses one after another, we still have places to live for the most part. So when you talk about spreading the idea of hope, you'll pardon me if I turn away and look kind of shameful, okay?
Of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over, it ain't going any further.
And do his job like a man. And
hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. So to sum up this Obama Nobel Prize thing, the bear puts it pretty succinctly in this email. This is what the bear writes. The Nobel Peace Prize, now available in select cereal and Cracker Jack boxes while supplies last. One in every 34,000 boxes. Hiya, hiya, hiya. Okay. I kind of feel sorry for Obama, though I really do. Regarding this particular issue, you know, you enter a select group, or you're nominated to a very select group of people. The whole Nobel thing is a little bit freaky anyway when you think about who it's named after and who established the prize. Oh, God. Every time they talk about how much blast power a particular nuclear warhead gives off, they refer 2 tons of dynamite, right? Nobel, you know, Alfred. Oh, no. Oh, well. There were some things that he said that I thought, you know, once again, were very... Oh, never mind. Screw it. I've said that too many times. The Inuit... You know, what we uneducated white people in the lower 48, what we call Eskimos. The Inuit are worried about changing actions that they see in the sun. Ra sent this to me. It appears, they say, to be rising earlier and faster than usual. Scientists see this as an optical effect owing to rising temperatures in the north. This was at CBC website. It's interesting to see that so-called primitive people are aware that something is not right with the weather and the climate. Probably to a greater degree than so-called educated people. Come on, we know this. But anyway, some Inuit say they hope scientists coming to Nunavut for research as part of International Polar Year can help shed light on changes they're seeing in the sun, particularly how it's been showing up more often in the usually always dark winters. For the past several years, residents in the high Arctic have observed that the winter dark season is ending earlier than usual, with the sun coming up at a different place than what people are used to seeing. This has to do, what have I been reading lately? Probably the same thing you have about there is this periodic, and I don't know what the period is, thousands of years, hundreds of years, where the relationship vis-a-vis attitude toward between the earth and the sun changes so that phenomenon phenomena, such as what are being reported by the Inuit, are easily explainable with celestial physics and so on and so forth. But anyway, an expert up there said, quote, the people are talking about, or no, this is one of the Inuit, I guess. The people are talking about earlier sunrise, more light in the dark season instead of being more total darkness than before. There are notices of more daylight earlier, and the dark season is not the real dark season that we used to know. A bit further south, the mayor of a town, Iglulik, said hunters have noticed the same phenomenon. The mayor said, quote, this year the sun started coming up so fast that it's almost like April when it's mid-February. He was referring back, of course, several months ago. Anyway, the scientists say they believe a warming climate is responsible. They said they hope Inuit and scientists working during International Polar Year can work together on in-depth analysis of the observations. Yeah, write it down so that, you know, once whatever cataclysmic events occur, and I hope Inhofe is one of the first to go, I really do, when these cataclysmic events occur, there will be a recorded history of what we observed, what we knew, what the deniers insisted was nonsense, and so on and so forth. Right? Is that too cynical? when we come back, there's one more thing I want to add about the Obama administration. According to a report in Raw Story and vetvoice.com, the Obama administration is requesting a San Francisco court drop charges against John Yoo, the author of the torture memos. The U.S. Justice Department, run by Eric Holder, an employee of Barack Obama's, has filed a friend of the court brief that, quote, argues that because he was giving advice to the president on a national security matter, John Yoo should not be held accountable for his actions, as it would have a chilling effect on advice provided to future presidents. Now, that's the position of the Obama administration. Because John Yoo was giving advice to the president, he wasn't giving advice, he was making up lies and justifications for torture. He was destroying the Constitution of the United States. He was pissing all over the Geneva Conventions. He treated the verdicts and conclusions drawn from Nuremberg war trials over a two-year period of U.S. History post-war. He was concluding that nothing said at Nuremberg was valid, nothing, because you cannot have those decisions come down. And overall, they concluded one thing, that you cannot declare war and then absolve yourself from guilt because you were following orders or someone was giving you wrong advice. John Yoo did all that, and now the Obama administration is saying that you should not be held accountable for his actions. I'll tell you what, I just goddamn give up, don't you? On Obama. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. So the Obama, this is Malloy program, the Obama administration has filed an amicus curiae, I've forgotten my Latin on that word, a friend of the court brief that argues that a San Francisco court should drop charges against John Yoo, former national security advisor or attorney or whatever the hell he was in the Bush crime family. Yoo should not be held accountable for his actions, as it would have a chilling effect on advice provided to future presidents. God, I hope that. I hate that. Andre writes, doesn't torture create a chilling effect on democracy? Doesn't obstruction of justice create a chilling effect? John Yoo is the one who said, as clearly as you want to interpret what he said, that crushing the testicles of the child of the detainee in order to make the detainee talk would be acceptable. Here's a transcript excerpt between international human rights expert Doug Castle and John Yoo. Castle, if the president deems that he's got to torture somebody, including by crushing the testicles of the person's child, there's no law that can stop him, the president? John Yoo, no treaty. Doug Castle, also no law by Congress? That is what you wrote in the August 2002 memo. John Yoo, I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. Some people at the debate compared Yoo's policies to Nazi Germany. He quickly denied that. Yet Yoo then immediately went on to argue that Bush can do anything he chooses to U.S. captives, even crush the testicles, not just of suspects, but their children. What more evidence is needed that Yoo and the policies he has helped write for the U.S. government are like the Nazis and Hitler? I was there. I heard the whole debate and recorded it all on tape. This is from Philip Watts. Sheila sent this to me. But this is the guy that the Obama administration now wants to protect and defend. To protect and defend. Is that not beyond astonishing? As Matthew Alexander writes at vetvoice.com, the lack of accountability for the authors of the policy of torture and abuse during the previous administration has been disappointing. The lack of accountability. The fact that the current administration has not established an independent commission of inquiry, but is now also impeding prosecution of those involved, is alarming. This particular action is not evidence of a transparent government or a break with past policies. And Matthew Alexander writes, lawyers should be held to professional standards, and in every profession there are lines where the performance of one's duties, in this case advising the president, can cross over into criminal negligence. If a medical doctor provided such negligent advice that resulted in harm or death to a patient, certainly they could be held accountable in both civil and criminal proceedings. A lawyer working for the White House should not be afforded immunity. In fact, this lack of accountability opens a window for future indiscretion. As men and women in uniform, we too would be held responsible for our actions and the performance of our duties if we crossed into criminal conduct. And there is no special immunity granted to us because of our service to the Commander-in-Chief. That was decided at Nuremberg, wasn't it? Well, the bottom line, Obama is creating an immunity doctrine for torturers, according to Raw Story. And the ACLU said today that shielding the Bush administration from accountability for its dangerous torture policy severely threatens the future of constitutional liberty in the United States. Jamil Jaffer, director of the ACLU's National Security Project, said in a conference call with reporters today, the Bush administration constructed a legal framework for torture. Now the Obama administration is constructing a legal framework for impunity. Jaffer said that while he credited Obama for having disavowed torture under his watch, he added that, quote, on every front, the administration is actively obstructing accountability by shielding Bush officials from civil liability, criminal investigation, and even public scrutiny for their role in authorizing torture. End quote. ACLU attorney Ben Wisner said, quote, it's the last month of 2009 and not a single torture victim has had his day in court. Not a single court in a torture case has ruled on the legality of the Bush administration's torture policies, end quote. Jaffer said that refusing to prosecute past acts of torture sets, quote, an extremely dangerous precedent, end quote, in the legal system. Torture victims, he said, can be denied their day in court solely based on assertions made by their torturers. That's scary beyond anything that Obama said at the Nobel Peace Prize award ceremony in Oslo about war is peace, and you know he has to order people in to be killed and to kill. But yeah, I'll take the peace prize. Sure, give me it. Man. Giving advice to the president on a national security matter. How is authorizing torture? What does that have to do with national security? This sounds like a page right out of Dick Cheney's playbook, doesn't it? Well, our national security is at stake here, so we have to torture people. How is our national security at stake? Well, it just is. How? In what manner? Some of these people that are being tortured are goat herders. They are cab drivers. They were 15 years old when they were snatched. What are you talking about? You wouldn't understand, Mr. Liberal radio talk show host. You should not be held accountable for his actions, Mr. You. John You should not be held accountable for his actions as it would have a chilling effect on advice provided to future presidents. This is astonishing. This is the position of Eric Holder's Justice Department and Barack Obama's administration, that holding people accountable for crimes against humanity would have a chilling effect on actions, advice provided to future presidents by people who advocate torture. Oh, my goodness. I wonder if the Nobel Prize Committee was aware that this was a directive that had to come directly from the new Nobel Peace Prize recipient. You think? We'll come back after the break. We're going to open up some phone lines here and invite you to call in. All right. The number here is 877-996-2556.
Don't show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Okay, very quickly, and then to your phone calls. Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, regarding that statement about no peace in our lifetime that Obama made at his acceptance of the Nobel Peace Prize. Tom writes, Obama is not the leader of a nation. He's the leader of corporations that oppress the American people, with a capitalist system that thrives on war. As Obama accepted the Nobel Prize, at the same moment, he's giving a complete pass to John Yoo, and any and all judicial officers who propose, endorse, and legalize torture. Yes, Obama the Christian, who finds hope and solution in illegal wars on innocent people, who else but a religious man could ever conceive of such absurd atrocity? He says we will have war in order to ensure peace, the same way we had to burn villages to make them safe for democracy. The same realm of lies used by the same realm of mindless, heartless, egotistical fools who love power for the sake of power. Well-educated, ignorant fools who will contemplate even burning down the world to make it safe for Jesus or Allah or some other dumbass configuration of human hatred, ignorance, greed, and violence these creatures call their God. No peace in our lifetime, he says. Well, F you, chump. Get out of here. Go to your damn heaven and leave the rest of us alone. Tom. Ay, 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 ay. I don't know, man. I mean, I do know. I don't know. I do know. I don't know. Okay. Mark is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. I know you're running out of straws on Obama. There's one last thing, though. Dick Cheney doesn't come out of the woodwork for nothing. He's trying to cover up the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed case, because if that goes forward in New York publicly and the public sees that that man was tortured 183 times, waterboarded, stripped nude, had female interrogators, had his children he was under the impression that his children were being starved in cells near him. The everything rides on this trial. I don't care if you're a Green Party supporter. In 2012, if we don't have enough evidence to show that we are a Green Party that can win, then we're just going to be another Ralph Nader in that equation. And the only way we can destroy, demolish, get rid of the Republican Party is to expose what they've done. This case is monumental. We have to keep our eye on the ball and focus on that if we want to win as a Green Party. And if Obama wants to win and regain some semblance of credibility in the world, he's got to keep pursuing this case. So I would just say, either side, if you want, whichever direction we choose, Green Party or backing or giving Obama another chance, whichever way we go, we have to get this trial in New York. We have to focus on the fact that the CIA uses torture to induce confessions. And this is case precedent. The 1999 Coretta Scott King case vindicated James Earl Ray. And if you go back to the evidence brought forth by the Citizens Commission of Inquiry, which proved that Phil Canal, the Attorney General, allowed the torture of James Earl Ray, then you will find that this is a long history of CIA modus operandi.
Well, I don't doubt for a moment what you're saying. I don't quite get the connection with the King case, although I know both Dexter King and Marty King, because we all lived in Atlanta for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. I'm not a real fan of the family because they are greed heads of the highest order, but that's not the point. The point is this. Both Dexter and Martin the Third, Marty, as he's called, have said, you know, in social settings, parties where I've been, that they do not believe that James Earl Ray acted alone in killing their father. In fact, they even, Dexter went so far as to say that he thought James Earl Ray was innocent. Not guilty, innocent. So, you know, like I said, I'm not a big fan of the family of Dr. King, the children, the three. What is there? Four remaining children? I think three or four remaining children. But you know, when you have a family who says that about the assassination of their father, as a matter of fact, Dexter spent time, I think, talking with James Earl Ray on a one-to-one basis and came away with that conclusion. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Thanks, Mark.
All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird.
He just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air. From those,
it's about 25 before the square hour. One more email here from Barry. Mike, there's a case to be made that you is subject to criminal liability, but this situation you are talking about is a tort case. They are seeking damages against you, not justice or judicial conclusions. There is a difference, and while I'd personally like nothing more than to see John Yoo clapped in irons and serving hard time, a decision in this, the Padilla tort case, is not going to be the best venue to make that happen. I'm not a lawyer, but having government officials subject to tort challenges in cases like this is not going to be productive. More importantly, it will not set precedent. I want to see you held criminally accountable and have his law license lifted. Barry. Okay. Fair enough. But I look at the response of the amicus brief filed by the Obama administration saying that this case should be dropped because someone should not be held liable for the advice they give to the president regarding matters of national security. I have to say I wasn't aware, because I didn't read far enough, I guess, that this was a civil case and not a criminal case. Now, with Barry's email, it's easy to understand that it is not a criminal case. Otherwise, there would be all sorts of actions going on around this case that are not occurring, is what I'm trying to say. And not saying it very well. So, okay, if Barry presents the idea that this is a civil case, which it is, and that's not the best place to bring John Yoo to any kind of justice, all right. That certainly does make sense to me. It's not very satisfying, you know, but it does make sense. But I wonder if it's not just this particular issue, though, is it, that the Obama administration is trying to stop, it has stopped, any attempt to investigate, hasn't it, the crimes committed by the Bush administration, actual provable crimes, including those committed by John Yoo, among scores of others. So I guess my overview is, even though Barry is right, this is a civil case, my overview is that any effort to stymie any action against any member, court action against any member of the Bush crime family, is an action that thwarts justice of some sort. But I'll defer to Barry because obviously he knows more about this than I do. It just it's difficult to accept that. You know what I'm saying? Ben is in Buena Park, California. Hey, Ben.
Buena Park. Thank you very much. You know, Mike, I sometimes think maybe you're just being hard on Obama because it's the dramatic, you know, thing that makes things so interesting.
Really? You think that this program would involve itself in phony expressions in order to what? In order to what?
Not phony. You know, I hate
or dramatic or anything I say. I don't go after Obama for drama. I do it because he told me he was a Democrat. He told me that he was going to effect change. He told me to have hope. Now, I grant you, that's all he said. He didn't say he was going to end war, end poverty, solve the problems. But the implication was, at least to me, was that this was a man who was going to be different from George W. Bush. And except for around the edges in a few, to me, minor situations, he is following Bush policy.
Okay, now let me pose this question to you. Because you just said around the edges. Except for around the edges, it's all the same thing. Now, how many millions of years has it taken us to get here, where we are today?
What do you mean? Get here in terms of what?
Our species, our evolution.
Oh, okay. A long time.
Yeah. And, you know, so you see that you are, at least you can see that you're the crust. I think our ancestors didn't even see that much.
The what?
Our ancestors. Are you know, the people that came before us that, like, are responsible for us, who, like, you know, we are their progeny?
Yeah, I didn't mean to define the term ancestor. I just meant, what are you talking about?
Mike, we are right here on the...
What?
We're right here where things are actually... We have right now as the chief of state... For, you know, the progeny of the slaves.
No, he wasn't. Barack Obama was never.
You're right.
He didn't come from.
You're right.
Ben,
you're right.
What?
Now wait, but his progeny, I mean, or his ancestors should have been slaves, just because they didn't get wrapped up in our American slave trade. It doesn't denigrate
okay,
where he's
Ben,
at right
Ben,
now.
Ben, wait a second. Your argument just went out the window. Hey, Ben, thanks for calling. No, Barack Obama's people were not slaves. Everybody who's dark-skinned or has ancestry in Africa, believe it or not, was not a slave was not involved as a victim in the slave trade. I know that's hard for a lot of white people to get their minds around, but trust me on this, it's true.
But what he was saying is, darn it, they should have been slaves.
Well, because they're, you know, like I said,
damn,
a lot of white people can't get past that thing that says, well, if you look like a African person or have a blend of African, you know, genetic whatever, because I, as a white person, that's the first thing I see, then you have to have been the, you know, the offspring of somewhere back in your heritage slaves. A lot of white people can't understand that. No, really. As bad as slavery was, as many millions who were sucked into that particular Holocaust. Oh, well. Till is in Austin, Texas.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Till.
Hi. Well, I'm a long-time, ever more reluctant Democrat.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about baseball, but I think I'm starting to feel like a Chicago Cubs fan. associating with the Democrats has given me an inferiority complex.
Oh, big time, yeah.
And, you know, why do we always have to be the lesser evil? And, you know, what fun is there in being a cop if we always have to play the good one?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think it's time for us to show those bastards what Democrats really stand for. You know, no more junior partner.
Well, I feel that way. You feel that way. A lot of people feel that way. But the people who have the power, that's corporate America, they understand and know how to control people of any political party except anyone who's not a Democrat or Republican. When I say any political party, I mean, you know, the two majors. They know how to control. So, you know, you and I may feel that way, but we're not there. You know, we haven't been bought. We're not owned. You know.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I guess I'm getting off my original theme here, but you know, it always comes down to when the elections come around. You know, it's always a stand down. You know, for you know, Greens and alternate party people. You know. Do we want, you know, Sarah Palin to win? If we don't vote for Obama, Sarah Palin's going to win. Well, you know, I'm so sick of always having to take the lesser of evils. I mean, it's the difference of a slow death versus a fast death. And I think I'm to the point where I'm ready to say, screw it. Either you Democrats, you know, you Democrats don't want Sarah Palin, then you vote Green, because I'm not voting for, unless it's someone like Kucinich. If it's Obama or anybody but Kucinich or someone very much like him, screw it. I'm not voting for him. And either, you know, they can vote for the Green candidate.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, Till. You know, I've reached that frustration level too. I hate to opt out of a system that's based on my not opting out. At least in theory, it's based on anyone who has the legal right to vote one way or the other. And if people start opting out of that system, then, you know, politics like nature will not accept a vacuum. Something will rush in, and we all know what rushes in, neo-fascists. So, I'm not sure what to do. If the system, though, has abandoned me and the system is producing nothing but this move toward fascist America, well, then, you know, why should I be an instrument of my own hanging, you know?
Before he can see the sky, yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too?
California lawyer writes in, Mike, the amicus brief filed by the Obama administration is about protecting executive privilege. What really needs to happen here is that Yu's law license should be yanked by the California State Bar. Let's see if they have the guts to do it. And Michael and Roswell suggests that, yeah, okay, it's a civil case, but maybe through discovery in a civil case, some of these crimes committed by Yu can be exposed. I don't know. I said before, when Nancy Pelosi declared that impeachment was off the table, that that looked like the end of it, that the probably the most criminal, you know, I don't know, maybe there were some worse ones back in the 19th century, but the most criminal administration in the history of U.S. presidency is going to get off scot-free. And I think that's precisely what's going to happen. any action taken by foreign courts that under the premise of universal jurisdiction, as was handled, handled by the Spanish court, where it concerned Augusto Pinochet, the Chilean dictator, any action against any American member of the Bush crime family under that doctrine should have happened by now. Is it going to happen at all? I realize there was one. There's one case, I think, that's still in the Spanish courts, but I do believe that these people are going to get off completely free. A, B, it will set precedent. Anyone who goes for the presidency of the United States, I think, Mr. Obama included, Al Gore included. I mean, you know, I don't know, Dennis Kucinich too. Who knows? Anyone who goes for the office understands what comes with it. The closest thing in this lifetime that they will ever experience in terms of absolute power. And we know what absolute power does. So, I don't know. My head hurts trying to figure it all out. Doesn't yours? Linda is in New York City. Hey, Linda.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I listen to you all the time, and you are such a comfort because I am so disappointed in what's going on. But I'm still, you know, with Obama mm-hmm. and him following the Bush protocol and my whole laundry list of things that of reservations that I had before I voted for him,
mm-hmm.
okay, have all come back to haunt me. You know, we've been fooled again, it seems like. And it's just hard to hold on to your democratic, progressive principles with all the corruption in the Senate, you know. And
well, you know, I have a suggestion, Linda, and this is a suggestion to myself and maybe to you. It's not hard to hold on to your principles if you realize, like I have finally, that the Democratic Party doesn't represent those principles. I still consider myself to be a capital D Democrat, a capital P progressive, and a capital L liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And my refuge all my life, I thought, was the Democratic Party. Big mistake on my part over the last, 25 or 30 years. So, and I think Bill Clinton, to me, and Jimmy Carter were the two prime examples that woke me up a little bit, like, hey, yo, both parties are corrupt. You're going to get the same thing from each one, except around the edges. So wake up, smell the coffee. And I think that's where people like you and me are at. We're still Democrats, but,
yes.
but not with this party. Can't do it.
No, can't do it.
So.
Can't do it. And you're so comforting, and I love listening to your show. And
well, that's
it's
kind.
Great to speak to you, Mike.
Well, that's kind of you to say. Thanks, Linda.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night. Take care. Lord, have we got time for one more? I think so. Stephen is in Burbank, California. Hey, Stephen.
How are you, Mike?
I'm all right.
That letter from the lawyer kind of set off my little thing a little bit. I was going to say that if any of these criminals are picked up, taken someplace for trial, that Obama would send in the A team. He would send in call an airstrike or threaten or do something to get him free, and just let him walk around free as a bird.
I don't think it would go that far, but
yeah, I know.
But go ahead.
Yeah, well, he would, if it did happen, he would have to do it because of this public sentiment, the right wing, forcing us to dance to their tune, And a scatterbrained idea would be, let's get the government to take over half the media, Let's give them pennies on the dollar and call it eminent domain. I mean, it is for the public good. It's kind of scatterbrained.
All right. Well, you know what? You are, Stephen. You are more cynical than me. I got to go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. James is in East Bay listening on Green 960. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, I got about a minute.
Yeah, I just think you're being a little bit too hard on Obama. And let me explain real quick.
Okay.
First of all, he's only been in office for several months now, and you can't expect him to reverse, you know, what, four centuries of this stuff overnight. You know, and it seems that the American people just suddenly and recently woke up and had a realization of the Southern strategy.
But can I expect him, you're right, but can't I expect him not to file a brief in this case against John Yoo, where I say, you know, on the Obama administration, don't prosecute him. Huh?
We need to be real careful at this critical time. And let me refer you to the New York Times last Wednesday had an article about the Comcast-GE merger and the party crashing on the same page. And if any critical reader could relate all of that information on that one page, if you read between the lines, and also a Rolling Stone article maybe a few issues back about infighting, if you can just look on the cover, there's a little small thing on one of the covers of the Rolling Stone. And it'll explain a lot if we can do some, you know, critical reading and thinking.
All right, well, I hear you, James. And listen, I'm out of time, man. Let's talk again when the show's a little bit, you got a little bit more time to go. Thanks, James. I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand, you know, I'm not expecting Obama to turn things around. I'm just expecting him to follow the law, I guess. I don't know what I expect. See you tomorrow night, y'all. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.